are dying to make a deal. We're the ones that are deciding whether or not we want to make a deal.
The U.S. president says a deal with China might be close, or maybe not. It's Wednesday, November 13th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, weekday violence in parts of Hong Kong, along with international calls for peace. A prisoner swap is announced in Afghanistan. And a new way to hasten the quick delivery of human organs for transplantation. All on today's VOA Asia. U.S. President Donald Trump Tuesday dangled the prospect of completing an initial trade deal with China soon, but offered no new details on negotiations in a campaign-style speech touting his administration's economic record. Markets had been on edge about Trump's highly anticipated remarks to the Economic Club in New York City, but barely moved after the speech, which contained no major policy announcements. Rumors early Tuesday that Trump might announce a venue and date for signing a trade deal with Chinese President Xi Jinping proved to be unfounded. Trump said U.S. and Chinese negotiators were close to a Phase 1 trade deal, but largely repeated well-worn rhetoric about China's cheating on trade.
The theft of American jobs and American wealth is over. They understand that. My administration has taken the toughest ever action to confront China's trade abuses. We're taking in billions and billions of dollars in tariffs that China is paying for. We're not paying. China is paying because they're devaluing their currency to such an extent, and they're pouring tremendous amounts of cash into their system. They're having the worst year in more than 57 years, more than half a century. Their supply chains are cracking very badly, and they are dying to make a deal. We're the ones that are deciding whether or not we want to make a deal. We're close. A significant Phase 1 trade deal with China could happen. Could happen soon. But we will only accept a deal if it's good for the United States and our workers and our great companies.
Trump said he would raise tariffs on Chinese goods very substantially if China does not make a deal with the United States. And that's going to be true for other countries that mistreat us, too, he added. We invite you to read more on our top story. Just follow us on Facebook, VOA Asia, and the voanews.com website. These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOA Asia. An airstrike carried out by American forces in eastern Afghanistan has mistakenly killed at least four Afghan soldiers and injured six others. An international conservation group says a very rare species of small, deer-like animal thought to be on the verge of extinction has been spotted in the northwestern jungle of Vietnam for the first time in almost 30 years. At least 16 people are dead after two speeding trains going in opposite directions collided in eastern Bangladesh Tuesday. China's pork prices fell sharply last week for the first time in 10 months as reports of fresh disease outbreaks in the Northeast led to more hogs being sent for slaughter. This is VOA Asia. Clashes between protesters and riot police continued well into Tuesday night at a prominent Hong Kong university, extending one of the more violent stretches in the 5 months of demonstrations. Police fired rounds of tear gas and rubber bullets at protesters at the Chinese University of Hong Kong, and students responded by throwing bricks and gasoline bombs. Clashes continued until police eventually used a water cannon truck and then began a retreat. The weekday clashes, thus far unusual for the Hong Kong protests, which have largely occurred on weekends, followed a day of chaos as protesters erected barricades on roads and subway tracks.
After some of the worst violence in decades, rare weekday clashes brought Hong Kong's central business district to a standstill on Tuesday. Police fired tear gas to break up pro-democracy protests and warned the city was on the brink of total breakdown. This was a day after they shot a protester at close range, and a man was doused in petrol and set on fire. He's still in critical condition. Scores have been injured in the clashes. And for the second day running, a flash mob descended during lunch hour. Office workers watched from the walkways. Others joined the crowd. One finance worker was spotted on the front line in a pencil skirt and court shoes, saying she's there to protect the kids. Men and women in suits shouted, "See you tomorrow," as the protests cleared out, with no sign, there at least, of the police. But violence flared around the city and Chinese universities, where police fired tear gas and protesters threw petrol bombs and bricks at them. After months of routine protest in Hong Kong, this week seems to be a turning point. Many workers across the city were sent home. Businesses in Asia's financial centre shut early as the violence took hold. Leader Carrie Lam has toughened her language against the protesters. This week, she called them selfish and the enemy of the people. The escalation also caught the attention of foreign governments. The US said it's watching with grave concern and urged all sides to de-escalate as the Chinese-ruled city plunges deeper into crisis.
Reuters reporter Lucy Felder in Hong Kong. Happening now in Asia, Uyghur activists said on Tuesday they've documented nearly 500 camps and prisons run by China to detain the ethnic group, alleging that China could be holding far more than the commonly cited figure of a million people. The East Turkestan National Awakening Movement, a Washington-based group that seeks independence, gave the geographic coordinates of 182 suspected concentration camps. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani says he has secured the release of two professors from the American University of Afghanistan in exchange for three captured Taliban, all part of a wider effort to revamp negotiations to end that conflict.
Afghanistan's President Ashraf Ghani says his government has secured the release of two university professors, an American and an Australian, held captive by the Taliban. In exchange, he says, three captured Taliban commanders will be released. The two professors are Kevin King and Timothy Weeks, both faculty at the American University in Afghanistan, a walled compound in the capital that's been targeted multiple times in the past. King and Weeks were kidnapped 3 years ago. The prisoner swap is part of a wider effort to start direct negotiations between the Taliban and Afghan government. Previously, the Taliban have refused to deal with Kabul, who they view as a puppet of the United States. They'd rather deal with Washington directly, or Pakistan. Taliban bombings, including the death of an American soldier, prompted the U.S. to abruptly end those negotiations in September. But the White House has since tried to get talks back on track. Two of the three Taliban being released are Hafiz Rashid and Anas Haqqani. Haqqani is the younger brother of Sirajuddin Haqqani, the leader of the Haqqani Network, the most deadly faction inside the Afghan Taliban. Earlier this year, the Taliban said Anas Haqqani would be a member of any negotiating team that dealt with the United States and demanded his freedom.
Matthew LaRotunda reporting. The small West African nation of the Gambia filed a lawsuit Monday against Myanmar at the International Court of Justice, accusing it of perpetrating a genocide on ethnic Rohingya Muslims, which forced hundreds of thousands to flee the Asian nation. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir reports it is a highly unusual move for two countries not at war with each other.
Starting in August 2017, more than 700,000 Rohingya Muslims quickly fled a scorched-earth campaign unleashed by the Myanmar military in response to attacks by Muslim militants inside Myanmar that killed a dozen police officers. Survivors crossed the border into Bangladesh, where they gave harrowing accounts of massacres, rape, murder, and villages burned to the ground. They continue to live there in a massive refugee camp, too afraid to return to their villages in Myanmar. The Gambia is supported by the 57-member Organization for Islamic Cooperation in its complaint. Paul Riker, a Washington, D.C.-based attorney who heads the Gambian legal team, spoke to VOA about the case.
The Gambia hopes by this case, and the OIC hopes by this case, to obtain a judgment from the International Court of Justice, you know, the highest legal authority in the international community, that Myanmar is guilty of the crime of genocide against the Rohingya people.
Such a ruling could take years. In the meantime, the lawyers are seeking an order demanding Myanmar stop harming the Rohingyas. That decision could come as early as December.
So we're hopeful to get that kind of protection for the Rohingya people very early in the case as a provisional measure so that the genocidal activities that we're seeking to end don't continue during the lawsuit.
The Myanmar government strongly disputes accusations of genocide. UN Ambassador Hao Do-Swan told VOA in an email that the lawsuit is a politically motivated international pressure tactic against his government and that the Gambia should mind its own business. Richard Dicker, director of the International Justice Program at Human Rights Watch, says the Gambia is within its rights to file the complaint.
Gambia has filed, in a very innovative and creative way, a complaint against the government of Myanmar that Myanmar violated its obligations as a state under the terms of the Genocide Convention. Both the Gambia and Myanmar are state members of that convention to prevent and punish genocide.
The UN has called the atrocities a textbook case of ethnic cleansing, and the head of a UN fact-finding mission said last year that estimates of 10,000 Rohingya deaths are conservative. The only other successful prosecution of a genocide case under the Genocide Convention at the ICJ was brought by Bosnia and Herzegovina against Serbia in 1993. It took 4 years for the court to issue its decision, largely in favor of Bosnia. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Stay with us on VOA Asia. Coming up, we will take you to the latest motion picture boomtown in the United States.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The European Union voiced concern at human rights in Cambodia Tuesday as it gave a one-month deadline to authorities to respond to a report on its investigation before deciding whether to suspend trade benefits. The EU has threatened to suspend the trade preferences over a crackdown on the opposition, NGOs, and the media by the government. VOA Asia continues with the VOA business scene. Lego plans to open more stores in China, considering the more open and better business environment as well as strengthened online protection. It is the second year that the Danish toy maker Lego has attended the China International Import Expo. Lego is showcasing some of its latest products and creations as the toy giant seeks a greater retail presence across China. Niels Christensen is the company's CEO.
It's a combination of an exhibition of products with panel discussions, with actually also the Chinese authorities being in place and opening up for dialogues around business climate.
Christensen says he has personally observed the strengthening of IP rights protection in China over the past year.
What we don't like is if somebody kind of misuses brand names or IP rights to mislead consumers. So what we've seen also since last year is really that also authorities have gone in and have actually helped protecting those rights.
He said the China International Import Expo is providing lots of opportunities for the Lego brand in the Chinese market.
There's really a good fit between the mission of the CIIE, really about a shared future. We are working very closely with e-com players and digital players like JD.com and Alibaba. We are working with Tencent, the Lego Cube, where we're providing a safe, social environment for kids, digital environment for kids.
A drone-like flying taxi whirred over Singapore's waterfront as its German developer, Volocopter, hopes the test of the aircraft will revolutionize travel in traffic-choked Asian cities. The 18-propeller vehicle flew for about 2 minutes and 30 seconds around the Marina Bay District. It is a battery-operated, two-seater taxi designed to quietly fly past skyscrapers. Volocopter has already tested the aircraft in Dubai, Helsinki, Germany, and Las Vegas. The Singapore trial is the first in the heart of the city. CEO Florian Reuter says Singapore is likely to be among the first to get the service, with a commercial rollout expected in 2 to 4 years.
So Singapore already proves to be the prime hub for us in order to open up the Asian market and introducing this new type of transportation.
Prices for a trip in the aircraft have not yet been determined, but Volocopter is aiming for just above the fare of a traditional taxi ride.
In the future, we foresee many more vehicles flying in the air, right? From small unmanned delivery drones to large unmanned drones to air taxis such as the Volocopter. And, of course, legacy aircraft like helicopters and airplanes will have to all coexist in more and more dense airspaces. So in order to get there, we need to develop today's air traffic management system one step further into a universal traffic management system.
The company hopes to introduce the service to traffic-clogged Asian cities like Jakarta, Manila, and parts of India and China. For VOA Business Scene, I'm Ira Melman. This news break from VOA Asia. Indonesia launched a website Tuesday that would allow the public to report radical content posted by civil servants, and authorities in the world's biggest Muslim-majority country pushed to combat hardline Islamist ideology permeating government. All the big stories come your way through the day at VOA Asia Facebook. Now on VOA Asia, the first successful organ transplant surgery was performed in 1954 in Boston, Massachusetts. And since then, millions of such operations have been done. Yet despite the revolution in this sphere of medicine, one challenge remains: how to get the new organ to the patient faster. Because at times, a handful of hours is all doctors can afford. A New York City company called Blade may have an answer by providing helicopters that serve as air taxis to deliver very precious cargo to donor recipients in just minutes. Anna Nelson has the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
The company Blade used to be a high-end helicopter taxi service, but recently they've also moved into the business of saving lives. Blade helicopters are delivering organs to patients as part of the MediMobility program.
We had the equipment that was available and dedicated to us. We have the dedicated infrastructure at all three New York City heliports, and we have 24/7 coverage in terms of our flyer relations and operations team. So we had all the pieces of the puzzle to do something like this.
Delivering organ transplants is a race against time. Before now, when an organ became available, doctors had to drive to the nearest airport, fly to neighboring cities, then drive again to get to the patient. And all this had to be done in 4 hours. That's the time limit on the viability of an organ.
From the moment that we cut off the blood supply to the heart in order to transport it to our recipient center, that period of time is what's known as ischemic time. Basically, time where the heart is not receiving any blood or oxygen. And on some small scale, the cells are beginning to die.
NYU Langone Health, where Dr. Carrillo works, was the first to test the MediMobile program. And it was an instant success, cutting the travel time from 4 to 2 hours.
When we get off the helicopter, we unload the cooler. Thankfully, it's right across the street.
Before MediMobile, doctors would sometimes turn down available organs because they knew they couldn't get there in time. Nathan Alexander is head of rotorcraft operations at Blade, and ever since the company started the program, he has been working practically 24/7, coordinating the flights to save lives.
The organs are actually en route at the moment, directly to East 34th Street. We'll have an ambulance standing by upon landing to bring the crew over to Langone, and that will help expedite the transfer process.
Inside the Blade office, all flights carrying donor organs are highlighted in red and have priority over others.
Even just watching the doctors get off the helicopters, it's just sort of moving, like, wow, the burden of what we're doing and how much of an impact it has, that there's someone at NYU waiting to receive that organ, and it's going to allow them to continue to live, which is, I think, remarkable.
If the experiment keeps working efficiently and effectively, Blade hopes to start working with more clinics over time. For Anna Nelson in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
Ferocious wildfires were burning at emergency-level intensity across Australia's most populous state and into Sydney's suburbs Tuesday, as authorities warned most people in their paths that there is no longer time to flee. New South Wales State is under a week-long state of emergency, a declaration that gives the Rural Fire Service sweeping powers to control resources and direct other government agencies in its efforts to battle those fires. Recently, a film studio in Albuquerque, New Mexico, signed a billion-dollar contract with entertainment giant Netflix and a $500 million deal with NBC Universal Studios. These agreements with Albuquerque Studios come on the heels of New Mexico granting enhanced tax incentives to production companies that film in the state and hire local talent. One of the seedbeds for such talent is the Central New Mexico Community College. VOA's Penelope Pulu visited the school and has this report.
Film instructor Carlos Gonzalez is showing these first-year students at the Central New Mexico Community College how to operate expensive on-set cameras and other equipment. Before the academic year is out, some of these students will be working for Albuquerque's film industry, says senior film instructor Jim Grebner.
So our program is only a two-term program. That's basically half a year where we get through the whole protocol of how to make a movie and workflow, and then we expose people to all the different tools they'll need on a set, and then try to get them specialized in a different craft.
Grebner likens CNM's program to a boot camp, where students are working around the clock learning crafts such as wardrobe, electrical, lighting, and camera to meet the needs of the booming industry here.
The biggest thing we have to teach them is stamina, because they're coming in a world where everybody expects an 8-hour workday. We got 14 hours as the average.
Now try the pan. That means this. There you go. You're doing it.
It is not just a men's only club.
Hollywood's big on upping the percentage of women in all the below-the-line crafts. So if you're a woman and want to become a grip, I can get you a job tomorrow.
Apart from learning to be a grip, that is to be part of a team that builds a movie set, the student gets to be mentored by a local union member in developing more on-set experience.
When a unit production manager needs people, then they go to the union, and union people get the first shot.
Gabe Reyes, an instructional technician at CNM, went through the school's program and afterwards got hired here as a full-time instructor. He also freelances for the film industry.
From the time that I was hired on to now, I've already seen the program grow in huge amount of numbers. It's almost doubled in size.
Especially now that New Mexico's tax initiatives require that at least 60% of production hires are from the state.
Future prospects are great. We get people coming in here all the time looking for students.
Prospects are also good for homegrown New Mexican directors and actors who want to build a career in their home state. Riley Del Rey, a student in the film program at CNM, recently completed a short film called Doubt.
I think it's important for people that are moving here to work on productions to take a look at our work and to start selecting their directors and their talent from this market, because that's what's going to get people to stay and that's what's going to uplift our state.
Roll sound.
Speed.
Cameras. Dolly.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News.
Action.
Albuquerque, New Mexico.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Why not visit our VOAnews.com program page? See us on YouTube. Follow us on VOA Asia Twitter. And let's hear from you. VOA Asia Facebook and our email, VOAasia@VOAnews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Carl Starling, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our team of Jim Stevenson, Keith Lane, and our interns, Hyung Afra and Candace. My name's Ira Melman. I'm in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead.